CliffCentral.com.
Okay, good morning. Welcome to the Gareth Cliff.
That was going perfectly, Sia. I was totally with you. Everything this morning is going a bit awry, folks.
Now we're good.
I take no responsibility because I was here on time, ready with witty banter and lighthearted commentary. But the technical demons.
Thank you, God.
We are scrambling behind the scenes to defeat the technical demons. We just threw holy water on them, which is why the music doesn't work. Really bad idea when it comes to a digital device.
Mm-hmm. And God, we say thank you for your service. Good morning. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. Gareth isn't in just yet, but we have God, we have Mulele, and we have myself to take you through the morning. There's still so much to get into in terms of news, but everyone is still sounding off on last night's lotto results. If you missed it at the beginning of the show, we were talking about how and whether you play the lotto or not. Personally, Cliff Central, we like our friends at Lotto Land, but the Powerball results came out last night as, and I kid you not, and I read it in
numerical order.
Thank you.
The order in which it came out of the machine, the numerical order of the winning numbers.
That order, yes. It came out as 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So you repeat there, the numbers were, if I get this correctly, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Imagine, and the Powerball was 10.
And the winning Powerball amplifier number is 10. I see Umi's mouth is moving, but he's not. Oh, it's going well this morning.
Mr. Schmangle says, winning the lotto is a game of luck. Everyone says they will win the lotto one day, but we all know it will never happen. It's like Sia singing in tune one day. It'll never fucking happen.
I believe in you, Sia. And I also believe that I'm destined to win a massive lotto. And the reason it hasn't happened yet is because I would have killed myself with it if it happened when I was younger. So the universe is protecting me from myself and giving me the lotto at just the right time. No, but I agree, actually. I agree with Herr Schmangles that you're never going to win. But for about 150 Rand a month, it can be possible as opposed to impossible.
Oh, wow. I hate reading as I go. I could have not read that message. Screw you, Mr. Schmangles, okay? John says, thanks for clarifying.
He's trying to keep a straight, keep his game face on. It's going to say keep a straight face, but that's not at all what I meant. Keep his game face on and look like he's not seriously internally processing being told he'll never sing in key. Sia,
I know.
I believe in you. In fact, you care to me now because of your incredible ability to sing in key. Don't give up and don't let anyone ruin your dreams.
Thank you, Gordon. I believe in autotune as well. One day I'll release my hit single, my next hit single, by the way. Yeah. Carl says, please let Sia know that it's other than that, not either than that. Not being a dick, just an FYI. Thanks.
Look, I mean, he did throw in the not being a dick bit, and he's correct. Mm. I didn't notice that you do that, or I would have been a dick about it sooner myself.
Mulele, we still can't hear you.
We cannot hear that, Umbi. No, we cannot.
You are on mute on Webinar Chat.
There's a little mute button. Yes, we're bad at this. I apologize to all of us.
This has been a shambles. This has been an absolute shambles. As an adult,
we're doing our best. What was that, Umbi? What were all the things you said?
Yeah, we're giving it a bash. Yeah, nothing interesting, but with Carl at the end, as long as you say, with all due respect, generally you can say anything you want, you know, like with Carl there. Basically what he said was, with all due respect, Sia, you are a waste of space on Earth. That's what he said. I'm just translating. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what Carl said.
Let's just bring it down.
I'm just saying you can say anything. I don't believe that. No. Sia, I love you. I work with you, so I see that you are incredibly valuable to people on Earth. But
yeah, I don't know what Carl's not seeing, because I can see it, I can hear it, but more importantly, in my heart, I can feel it.
Oh, my goodness.
Hashtag, true. We've got all the literature in the world that says it.
We are led.
We've read it. It's people with cool names have written them. But we more than that, we can just feel the truth.
We are led. God. Yeah.
The truth
for all of you right now,
with the right vibrations. That's how all the most important discoveries have been made. like numerology.
Ah, oh, please. John says, thanks for clarifying. Okay, now I understand. This is on the numbers thing, and then says, happy birthday to someone. Happy birthday to whom, birthday. John?
Might be John's birthday. Play the lotto, okay. Dude. Choose a straight sequence of numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Happy birthday to you, John. Good for you. And then Monobis says, well, I'm definitely snitching on you guys when Gareth gets here. You guys are terrible. Totally derail the show. And I say this with all the love. Hey, Monobis.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a bit light on Gareth Cliff, this particular Gareth Cliff show. So it's something different for today. Should we all try our best to be Gareth? And then I don't have the hair for it. I tried, but I couldn't. Oh, wait, there he is. We got a bobblehead. Things happened to me today, and they were bloody unpleasant. And then the Royals did some things, and they were very important, and they mattered. And then
don't be a petty socialist.
I'm sorry. And then Donald Trump was good, actually. And then I'm going to fight with people online. Over to you, Gord. Thanks, Gary.
Am I the only one making an effort here this morning? Do you guys value your jobs? Let's talk news, please.
Okay, we're back. Oh, we still didn't get to the news headlines, and there was Hungarian homophobia vibes.
That's what I want to get into. Okay, so this is a story that I saw yesterday afternoon, just the headline itself, and I thought, this is so unreal. I do not believe it. Up until then, I started reading more about it. But yes, one of the listeners this morning also brought it up. But take it all in as much as you can and see what you do with it. A member of the European Parliament representing Hungary, his name is Viktor Orbán.
Okay.
No, sorry, I lie. A member of the European Parliament representing Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's party has resigned from his position in Brussels. Now, this man's name is Joseph Szajder. Am I butchering the name? Probably. Let's just call him Joseph for Joseph, for the sake of the story. Joseph has resigned from his position in Brussels after he was caught what reports describe as a 25-man orgy on Friday.
Yeah. What? And this is an anti-gay dude.
Exactly. I was going to add, what makes the story extra saucy is this Joseph guy is one of the people who talks about homosexuality and so horrible and, you know, doesn't believe in giving, you know, gay people equal rights. And here he is caught this past Friday leaving a 25-man sex orgy.
Sounds like my kind of political party, right?
Listen, I've been to these types of sex parties and whatever. 25, you got to live a little bit, right? But 25-man orgy for a politician is an unbelievable thing. Does he think he can go to that kind of thing and no one's gonna say a thing? What world is this guy living in?
So this is how it all happened over the weekend. Joseph has resigned officially on Sunday, after he admitted to breaching Belgium's strict lockdown rules to attend the sex party. Now, the police found 25 naked men at the gathering, including Joseph. We'll still get some more details, including some other diplomats. So
probably the enemy party as well. It probably gets super saucy, like a proper soap opera, but more hectic. So the police caught them, not somebody tackled.
Yeah, the police said that this is the official statement. And this is why, you know, I feel bad, but I chuckle at some very serious people who have to deal with messy stories like this. You actually have to type up a statement and, declare everything that happened. The police have said, we interrupted a gangbang. These are their official words.
They officially called it. Early on Tuesday morning, we interrupted a gangbang where we found many members of the anti-homosexual.
Wow.
Belgium's anti-homosexual. That's what we're having an actual general goodage meeting.
Right? Let me tell you more about
a meme that I got yesterday saying, if two people both say they don't like broccoli and the one has tried it and the other hasn't, whose can you be more certain of that they're not into broccoli? Which is an argument for how trying gay sex is the straightest thing you can do. But it's like, maybe they were all there just to know their enemy. Like, guys, let's have a research day. These are the things apparently they're doing. And then got caught.
You can gladly be Joseph's spin doctor, even though I don't really think that is substantial enough. And Sarah, yes, to clarify, there were 25 men, as in male people in the orgy. Yes. So just to let you know more about Joseph, he is, and I'm pronouncing it as Joseph because there's a Z and an S in there that's confusing me. So he's a right-wing politician. And he was one of the people, one of the loud voices back in 2010, who was believing in rewriting Hungary's constitution to, in quotes, protect the institution of marriage as a union of a man and a woman. So he was still there back in 2010 going, same-sex marriage is not going to be a thing.
And I don't then know why I went off in my head to thinking this was Belgian for a second. I may have said Belgian and then you said Hungarian. Of course it is.
Right.
But yeah, East Europeans are hardcore. I mean, I don't want to be generally stereotyping entire chunks of the planet's population, but they do tend to be pretty hard-leaning in their beliefs.
Well,
as a broad rule.
They're also going hard at 25.
Hey, shout out to him for being able to organize 25 guys to hang out with him. That's hard, man. That's
25 dudes to come and ruin my political career, even if I wanted to.
Listen, how difficult is it to get six of your friends just to come round for a bribe to watch the football? Shout out for 25. That's what I'm saying. Hey, be on time.
You like 60 dudes to get 25 of them there.
Yeah, hey, shout out, man.
It was probably meant to be a 200-man gangbang. Maybe they even invited some women, but they were all from Cape Town, so they didn't go.
Oh, okay. Well, God, look, this is how the police got involved. The police got involved because officers were called after a complaint about a nighttime disturbance. Also, just looking at the police press, the statement here, I feel bad for them. And then that's when they found Joseph climbing out of a first-floor window. Yes. And he was spotted trying to flee along the gutter. So he was just trying to like get away as fast as possible. But yeah, authorities said narcotics were found in his bag. This is a bag that was found inside the unit, and that he, though, insists that he had not taken any drugs.
I'm sure. He also insisted that he hated gay people and didn't think they should get married. Maybe he just genuinely has no problem with gay people but doesn't like marriage. But you've got to know that for a 25-man gangbang, it's going to involve some drugs, I'm sure. I mean, just by the sheer amount of stamina needed. I'm interested, though, to ask the lovely listeners, without getting too graphic or anything too gross, like, what are your best Gunnage escape stories? Have you had to make any escapes? Did they go badly? Have you had someone try to escape and then they did, or it didn't go well? Let us know your favorite Gunnage escape stories and we'll get through the best one.
Well, let me start off with you two. Do you have any?
So I've got a story, but I couldn't really escape. It was a bit of a sitch. So my girlfriend would be strong. I was vibing with someone at a stage, and there was always a thing with her mom. There was just always this tension. Yeah, it happened. And then she came home like a day early from holiday. And yeah, let's just say, yeah.
Yeah,
too. We were no longer vibing after that. No, like you were called red-handed because we weren't expecting any. Yeah, and they lived together. It was a mess.
I've got a pal that he was dating a girl when he was at the end of high school and she had a hot young mom. And he also went to the house to go and hang out with his girlfriend, but he finished school before her, so he was there before she was. And the mom and him got at it in the pool, waiting for the daughter to come home. And then the dad arrived unexpectedly while they were doing it. So they had to sit at the edge of the pool, like with your arms on the paving, so that you're right up against the edge and not be able to see as the guy was saying, hi, everyone. But there were no pants.
Wow. I grew up on I lived in an estate in the north of Johannesburg where this type of stuff was very well known. So if you drive past Four Ways, I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about. People play golf there, and these kinds of things happened all the time there. It was unbelievable. I had a few mates that had to come to my house to duck fire. There was a time. This thing is, and that's happening now, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, that stuff is real.
I try not to get myself into a situation where I'm that knowingly where there's any chance I'm going to have to run away from anything. I'm no home wrecker me. I used to be when I was a younger man. I used to say, hey, I don't have a commitment to anyone, so that's not cheating. But these days I felt the other side of that equation and I'm less chased out by a husband.
I'm not a saint by any stretch of the definition, but come on, folks. If you do dodgy stuff, there's just always that chance you will get caught. And now getting caught in something messy, just don't even try it. Like, I mean, Bulelo, what do you say when the mother walks in of your this girl that you were vibing with? There's no way that you can
stop the presses. It's making a guest appearance on this week's edition of the Gord CRMV show.
Yay!
I'm so embarrassed. My God. Sia and I were talking just yesterday. We were like,
yesterday, Papa.
I promise you, we were saying, oh, it's so great. And, you know, we haven't missed one show and we've been so good this year. And we're kind of wrapping up the year and we were at the office and everybody was saying, oh, well done. You've all worked so hard. And here I am, fucking first day, straight after we've had that conversation. I'm like, oh, hi.
Well, rest assured, right, Garrett, in your absence, in our capable hands, we have butchered the show so far and done an appalling job. So if you could please step in and rescue it, we'd really appreciate that. There is still time.
I have no doubt.
I say speak for yourselves. I think we held it up to a very decent standard, Gary.
I just want to say, most people, if you're watching on Webinar Jam, you'll see what I'm pointing at. Is people are saying this is the better Gareth Cliff. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you what the people are saying. They say they prefer this one.
I also
let that be what it is, yeah.
So it was like four of us in favor of the real you and like 96 or so listeners dig the bobblehead.
No, so you must never ever, I mean, I had my alarm was on, but obviously I slept through it. And then I had my phone on silent, which is just ridiculous. Anyway, there it is. No, it's not on silent, stupidly. Anyway, what have I missed?
Someone in the comments keeps mentioning that Sia shats his pants. It keeps coming up and it cracks me up every time.
In other words, I have
Gareth,
I've missed nothing. So that's all.
Let me tell you what you've missed. What I'd like to know is, in your mind, before we introduce you to what we just finished off with, what do you think the biggest orgy is with just men that you can have? That'd be a great time. Would be like what number? If you were gay and you were a man, what would be the number you'd want to have sort of a gay sex orgy party with?
Is this what happens when I leave you people alone for like an hour?
This is breaking news. This is happening in Brussels.
Relevant political issues. We say, what's a realistic number to strive for?
Are you saying like with the how many guys would be too many or how many?
Or like a good time. On the bubble. Take me to the bubble. 13, 15.
We are cuck impressed at a politician's ability to get a 25-man gangbang going. Not a 3-man, not a 7-man, 25-man.
Okay,
and
but then
that must be to organize logistically, even if you're rich.
You see, I mean, it's mathematics, right? So, you know, the whole idea of the more the merrier doesn't really work here because...
No.
By the way, was it... what are you saying? It was you, Mbulelo, that was in an orgy.
Well, Mbulelo also admitted that to us, yes. Yeah.
So it's mathematics because the way I figure these things is... And this is pretty... This is quite revolting, but it's necessary to think of it this way. So if you imagine that, for example, a woman could be a 1, a 2, or a 3 input woman, right? Depending on what her preferences are.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 5, so, actually, maybe, but let's not get into it.
No. So in other words, you, as a girl, you could be, I mean, this is something people know, a 3-input woman. I'm not that all women are.
The point is that you can get like 2 women for every. Anyway, this is gay. We keeping it gay now. We don't want to know about your weird sexual shit.
Let's think about this. All right. So if you're as a gay guy, you would be able to take One, two.
No, it's not how many you can take, it's how many you can arrange. We know the mechanics of gay sex. You could probably organize, you could probably manage about four dudes at a time. But this guy had 25. And it's like, he's also an anti-gay politician.
What a conversation to wake up to, my God.
Right? I feel you know when you have a lesson at school and halfway through the lesson, it's like there's a 0% chance the teacher's coming. It's one of those lessons where the teacher's not coming. And then they come and they ask about what's written all over the board and like screw through the sandwich against the computer. And like you've got to all explain. Like, well, we were just talking.
But take me through your numbers game. I'm interested in where that was going.
No, so I was trying to figure out how many any you know single person could handle, but I don't know. I really don't know. I suppose
two, a man is two, isn't it? A man would just be two. So
it's not the topic.
Because what about if you put your hands up and you move
the... like how President Trump likes to dance.
Donald Trump celebration dance.
Like Donald Trump dance. What are you doing there? Anyway, look, I don't think there's an upper limit here, guys.
Yeah,
I don't think there's an upper limit. I think
you're an anti-gay right-wing politician and you have a bit of gay sex on the side. It's pretty impressive that your sneaky secret gay life involves not just orgies, but 25-man orgies. And he had to climb down the drain pipe to escape.
Mm.
But in ancient Rome, we know that they had whole rooms full of people where they couldn't even count the number of people involved in this. So I don't think there's an upper limit. I think you've got to be...
Because you don't know where one starts, one ends, and the next begins.
Yeah, correct. And if you lose your partner, it's like losing them at a rock concert. So if you go in, if you're a swinger and you go in with someone and you lose your partner in an orgy like the ancient Romans used to have, then there's, you know, then
and there was, and in this case in particular, there were drugs also found in the place, and they're now denying that it was.
Tell me the story because I missed the whole thing. So what happened?
So it's a Hungarian MP who has now actually resigned over the weekend. So this all took place on Friday. And the police were called to this particular venue because it was a nighttime disturbance. Police stumbled on 25 men going right at it. And the police then found this Hungarian MP out, like trying to creep out of the building and like escape through the gutters. And yeah, found him, and then he officially resigned this past Sunday. What makes the story extra saucy, and I think we are going to see developments over the next couple of days, is there were also diplomats at this party or orgy as well, and their names haven't been released yet. So let's see what happens there.
My best is also that the police referred to it as like, we investigated a gangbang, and
the official
gangbanging men at the gangbang.
The official word from the police is, we interrupted a gangbang.
Did you guys see that they found the director of the CIA dead?
What? Under mysterious circumstances? Or was he like 74 and had a chesty?
I mean, as much as I love your story that you told me about this morning, this is quite a big story. She's a director of the CIA, Gina Haspel. She was found dead. That was what I heard in the story. So obviously you have to check whether these things are true or not. Apparently, the speculation was that she had died, but since then they've discovered some more news. Apparently, she's not dead. So the fact
if the CIA can't keep tabs on which of their people, especially their leader, are dead.
So I don't understand how stuff like this happens. I don't know how it is that people make up a story like this. I mean,
I see it all over Snopes as well, and Snopes says it's false. Yeah.
So they said, no, she was found dead of natural causes, but it turns out she's not, and the whole thing was made up. But the fact that this information could go all the way around the world before someone else, you know, could correct it is just, and that they'd make up a story like this about the CIA. Director just proves to you how fake news is. You know, when Donald Trump came out and said fake news, everybody's like, oh, he's just trying to discredit the media. There's a huge amount of fake news out there, and we all know it now. Now we accept it. But remember, before he came along, nobody said that. Yeah, you spoke about that stuff.
The news at face value. But it's now, it's the same as like any sort of political issue that's being dealt with in the social sphere. It's like now you've got just the people, there is enough legitimate news that the fake news callers can be discredited, and there's enough fake news that the legitimate news can be discredited. The truth somewhere in the middle, and you've got like still good school, old school journalism struggling to make a living, and total bullshit, and no one can tell what's falling to them.
So you don't know what to believe anymore. And then you see this when a story like this is patently falsified, someone puts it out on the news, and it's already spread to more places than the fact check will ever get to. And you know, I just can't. I think everybody feels after 2020 that you just can't tell what's true and what isn't anymore. Yeah. What do you think I'm overreacting to this?
Well, dude, I mean, I've had this, this, as I've discussed with you before, I've had this very limited news diet, and I catch the like world headlines, or I heard about the Boko Haram shit earlier, like any major horrible shit I'll get to from you guys. But the rest of the time, it's just peace and quiet. And I've yet in about 6 months of doing this had like, oh no, I sure missed out there. Only hearing about Sean Connery's death 5 days later. Like, it's just horrible shit. And, you know, when there's a nuke, you'll find out.
And also, I'd have to disagree, Gareth, because if you think back for most of modern civilization, the Catholic Church has controlled what the absolute news is. So we've always had fake news. Now they're just getting better at what we call technocracy, right? Which is basically what they were doing 2,000 years ago in the church anyway, except now they just have to shape us more subtly instead of, hey, we are the absolute power. If you want to come and tell us that science is real, Galileo, you go sit in that room and you rot. Unless you know.
Even with the presence of all the fake news that's now that much easier to distribute, we do have tools at our disposal that we never had before.
Absolutely. So
you can actually find things out for yourself, obviously.
So we've got far less fake news now than when our good people at the Vatican were, you know, had their hands on our throats forever.
I think we just now call it out. And what I was trying to say about the difficulty of identifying the middle area is that everything is kind of now a little bit suspicious. But everything used to be taken as gospel if it came from the news with a cool da-da-da-da-da thing and a logo. And we just, that was the news. It's been bullshit probably forever. But now someone can deliberately write something fake. And whereas there used to be barriers to entry to get that onto the TV or into the newspaper, there now isn't. You can just pluck that off into the internet and watch it sail away like a little paper boat on the stream.
I can highly recommend a book. Sorry, Gareth, The News by Alain de Botton, which breaks down this issue quite nicely of how that dissemination of information. Yeah, the News, very interesting book.
You have not stopped about that book. Oh, it's God, unbelievable. Not a week goes by.
What were you going to say, Gareth,
No, I wanted to know if during the first hour, which I missed by oversleeping, which is very professional, I wanted to know if you managed to bore Mbulelo and Sia to death with your obsession over The Mandalorian, the new Star Wars.
No, I was waiting for you, actually.
Dude, what a great show.
So good. And I love that.
Oh, my God, what a great show. I love it.
20 minutes to 30 minutes long. And I watch them every week as they come out, and I'm like excited for a weekly TV event, and it's just so satisfying. I mean, I'm a moderate Star Wars fan in that I'm a lapsed Star Wars fan. I was a huge nerd about it, stopped caring after the prequels, got all excited about the new ones. They were hit and miss for me. Mm. I liked some of them. I thought the other ones were crap, but some were good, and I'm glad to have them as opposed to no more Star Wars ever. But this Mandalorian thing, they've just really, really nailed it. Like, Jon Favreau is so good at everything he does, all of his storytelling. So the storytelling aspect is great, the relationships, characters, all that stuff. And then, like, if you're a nerd, for every level of nerd, there's, like, stuff in here to make you go, oh, my God, in each episode. Yeah. So cool.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I am a Star Wars fan, and I've always been, and I think it's just great. And they have screwed up a lot of the movies, but the things that I've loved are Rogue One, the Solo movie,
the origin of so underrated,
and then this Mandalorian series. So what they've done for those people who don't know what the hell we're talking about, they took characters and they developed them in a different spin-off on each of these, but this one is almost a brand new character that they've introduced. And I think Jon Favreau wrote about this while he was busy with other movies. So the guy was, it was like a passion project for him. and eventually got Disney to buy into it. And it's just so well put together. You know, my little nephews watch it, and they are, what, 6 and 4? And I know people who are Star Wars fans from the early years of the first, you know, the first trilogy, and they love it too. So I think this is to please all those people is just impossible.
And it's just a good story. Even if you'd never seen Star Wars, I mean, obviously you'd lose a great deal of the value because it's a big Star Wars thing with lots of nerd Easter eggs. But even if you've never seen Star Wars before, it's just a cool kind of Western, you know, unlikely friendship story set in space. Right. You can actually have it as an entry point into Star Wars, and it would be cool.
So in other words, if you don't know what we're talking about, this could be the show that you start with.
Oh, I don't know. I think in the year 2020, if you aren't on the Star Wars train just yet, I think you're done. I think it's a certain type of person, and you really have to be into it.
Well, I'm giving you something to do during your holidays, because December's going to be some time where people actually have a bit of time on their hands.
Yeah, season one's available, so you can binge watch that. And by the time you do, they're already almost halfway through season two. So by the time you get through season one, so not only like trying to talk non-Star Wars fans into Star Wars, that's not really the issue. It's if you've ever been a fan and you kind of miss it from when you thought it was great, give this a try. And if you aren't against it but think maybe you need an entry point, this might be a good one. But yeah, if you've given up on Star Wars, maybe give this a chance.
I'm pleased that we will be joined by Brett Cohn a little bit later on. He's from the Gas Company, and he was wearing a shirt last week that gave Gord arc eyes. And I'm excited to see what he'll be wearing today.
I was just about to say, I thought I could hear a shirt approaching.
So we're going to talk a little bit about
very politics, loud.
Because even Brett says we can't avoid politics. We complain about it. It affects, especially this year, everything around us. And what could an alternative to politics be, the kind of politics that we have in the world now? I mean, this is something that is eternal. This is something I discuss whenever I'm around my friends. It's something that comes up in conversation with people who I think are smart. And nobody seems to be able to crack this one. So if we can at least get half the way in, I think we'd be doing a huge service to ourselves and each other. So that's with Brett Cohn from the Gas Company in The Alternative, which is coming up in just a few minutes' time. Wow. It's also Ben Karpinski's birthday today, because it's the 2nd of December.
DJ Ben K. Ken Bobinski in the house. What a legend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that means it's also Britney Spears' birthday.
That's right. It's Britney Spears' birthday.
I'm way more impressed by
Ken Bobinski. He's going to love that.
I hope he spins the decks at a legendary house jewel to celebrate his birthday.
I got a great email
just for old time's sake
from Caleb, who listens to the show. Listen to this quickly. Hey guys, and he mentions everyone on the show. So having been fortunate to visit some obscure places in the world through rugby, like Taiwan, Kurdistan, Madagascar, and others, coupled with my avid fascination with reading, I went to Namibia. And the one thing I heard from an old university friend on a small catch-up lunch is, you're so arrogant. I then went on a what Sherlock trip of my own life, and I discovered the following. One, never take advice from a place you would not take criticism from. Oh, this is just life advice. Okay, so he says, number one, never take advice from a place you would not take criticism from. Only professors can confer with other professors. Number two, wanting everybody else to be humble about their greatness that they'll never achieve is a way to make our mediocre selves feel better. And I think that's what we were talking about yesterday, Bulelo. Three, life is not a series of sports day competitions run by a mob of Karens or equality warriors. There is no participation trophy. Only the very unique and the best will be remembered. Anyone remember the guy that started the race when Jamaica shattered the world record in 2008? No. His name was Nesta Costa, and he was banned for doping, but we all know who Usain Bolt is. That's true. I constantly refer to Bolt as this example.
Carter was good. Family and friends know who he is, and he's important to them.
Ah, shut up, Gord. You get the point. Number four, those people who say, yes, they're arrogant, according to Caleb, want you to stay at your level. Sorry, at their level, so that you can pretend to celebrate, because deep down, their life is a full stretch of only the fairy tales that they read. If they say that you're arrogant, more often than not, you can do or know something they were never able to become. They never dared to try. A view from the terraces as a spectator is only good until the medal ceremony. Love the show. That's a nice saying. A view from the terraces as a spectator is only good until the medal ceremony.
Wow.
That's nice. Love the show.
I'm kind of like, that's one of those emails that makes itself immune to criticism because as soon as you do, you're one of those crabs in the bucket. So go team.
Exactly right. By the way, we're still looking for entries into somebody's business, and you can enter that by using the hashtag somebody's business and by emailing us contact@cliffcentral.com. Why would you do that? Well, maybe you've got a small business, a medium-sized business, or a business that needs a bit of a leg up after a really tough year, and you need someone to help. You need some advertising. You need some marketing. You need somebody to talk about your company, maybe to tell the story of your company properly. And we have a perfect place here at cliffcentral.com with an audience of really smart people who want to know what your story is. And you can get hold of us, and we will give you, along with Ozo, who are the guys who run that brilliant payment platform. You've probably seen it advertised all over the internet. If you want to join us with them in making it possible for more people to hear your story, then just email us, contact@cliffcentral.com, with your business story, or you can hashtag somebody's business on social media. And we, along with Ozo, will make it possible for you to tell your business's story. Awesome stuff. Okay. Are you ready for a busy morning with Brett? What's going on over there, Brett?
No idea. I've taken a leaf out of Gord's book, and I don't listen to anybody about anything that's going on in the world. And he's right. I've got peace. But it might be that I visited Madrid once or twice, and he gave me one or two sort of spiritual enlightening.
Madrid?
You're the Druid. You're my Druid. Oh, Druid, my Druid.
Oh, Druid. Right. Gotcha. I thought you said you went to Madrid and found peace. I was like,
I'm the first person.
Yeah. Great. What's going on the shirt though? That's what I want to know. What are those
parrots?
Oh wow!
Yeah, I was gonna say you're wearing a ballad today.
No, I'm wearing. Beth dressed me again, so that's my excuse for looking like a clot. But you know, it is what it is. There's some sort of representation that I'm supposed to talk about, but I have no idea what any of it means. Parrots being humans and repeating stuff. I don't know.
And your hair has got so long; it's coming out of the sides of your hat there, and over the headphones.
This is my uprising against COVID lockdown. I refuse to cut my hair until we're free people.
That'll show.
So basically, you're going to look like Samson.
Except if I take the hat off, there's sort of pieces of it missing. You know? It only grows on the sides and on my back.
Must be the clown vibe.
And a little bit out of my ears, because that's a Jewish thing.
And we call it a Jupro, right?
Yeah. Sad, but right. True.
So okay, have you so really tried to do a news fast? And if so, how's it been?
Shall you come again?
Have you really been trying to do a news fast? And if so, how's it gone? How's it been?
Yeah, I've a long time already, probably the better part of 2 years since I really spend any time listening to the news. Very much the same story as yours. Whatever you need to know will come through to you. The rest of the time, I really, you know what you remove out of the equation is all the fluff. I don't hear about ministers hitting other ministers or other people with the extension cords or ministers having parties that they shouldn't be having or people that are telling me I'm not allowed to go to the bottle store, going to the bottle store. Because that kind of stuff riles you up, but there's absolutely no benefit to having that knowledge.
Not just that, but the conversation around it. So
exactly.
One person shat in some other person's elevator yesterday, and now people are arguing over whose fault it is and what it means. It's like, guys, it doesn't even matter that it happened. Knowing that doesn't matter. But now I tell you about it or telling everyone your opinion, it's like, God.
Yeah, agreed. It also seems to – sorry, Gareth. What? Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it also seems to weed out some of the sort of circle of friends that hang around for that kind of conversation, which you really kind of probably don't need around you that much.
You know what happened in the old days? It was hard to get all the news, because you would first of all have to receive a newspaper, which not everybody in the world got. And then you would have to read that newspaper from cover to cover, which most people didn't have time to do. And it was almost a matter of pride that educated men in Western democracies would talk about the news with each other, not just to show off how much they knew, but also to test how much the people that they thought were their equals knew. Yeah. So it was a bit of a social thing. And these days, that obviously doesn't count because news is ubiquitous. Anyone with a cell phone has suddenly got access to news. So the value of it has dropped in terms of social cachet.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to have all that much news anymore. As Bulela pointed out earlier, the fact is that throughout most of history and most of civilization, most human beings didn't know what the hell was going on, even a village away, let alone in the whole world. And now what are we all going to pretend that we are deeply, deeply concerned about what's going on in Senegal or in Sri Lanka or in Suriname? And that's just the letter S that I can think about. When we don't even know what's going on often in our own neighborhoods. So let's get into politics this morning. I think this is really interesting. So we're tackling a big one today. And Brett kind of has thought of all the alternatives before. We've spoken about some pretty interesting alternatives. But how can we get to the next level on something like politics? Because you say you don't listen to news, and I agree, and I think that's quite a sensible approach. And I know Gord doesn't love politics either. But what can we do about it? I mean, have you been thinking about the alternatives here? What we could do differently, how we could arrange society differently, how we could have leadership behave differently?
Well, yeah, I think about it a lot. I think that we're not going to have time to get into too much detail. I think at that very rough brush strokes, I think that we need to think about smaller governments. I think we need to not underestimate mankind's ability to group himself. We do it all the time. If you look around, churches have groupings, social, perhaps clubs, crafts, hobbies, beer halls. There's all sorts of ways that people can organize themselves. Some of them are drunkard get-togethers. Some of them are real, legitimate, almost political organizations where people measure each other, judge each other, and look after each other. So I don't think you need massive centralized government. I'm very anti-centralization in any form. I think centralization, whether it be in a corporate environment, in a supply of goods to the people environment, or in a political environment, is a dangerous thing. The moment you centralize things, you centralize power.
Last week, you were talking about cryptocurrency, and we know that one of the reasons that is bound to work better is because it is decentralized.
Right. 100%. So IT actually gives us quite a lot of insight into how this can work. When I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, when the internet really burst onto the scene and personal computers really took off, where the software started getting strong enough to really drive almost every aspect of our lives. We were dominated by a company called Microsoft in the PC world, as everybody knows. And it was centralized power, and nothing could get distributed from there. And it was very proprietary. You had to buy the software. Bill Gates has been lambasted on many occasions. But one of the things that never seems to get mentioned is when he was a youngster, and 18 or 19 years old, he actually wrote an open letter to the hobbyist community lamenting the fact that software was being given away and that he felt that software should be paid for. So he's always sort of had that kind of outlook on life, which is very different to my outlook on life. But, you're allowed to have whatever your outlook is. Once he got into power, he found a goon named Steve Ballmer. And between the two of them, they just absolutely ravaged the world. And power was centralized, software was centralized, you had to pay for everything. It was a mess. Sorry, Gord.
They also revolutionized technology and kicked the world in the ass 20 years forward. You know, like, it's not as if there were not massive innovations that drastically affected the way people were able to do things for that little price.
I'd love to have this conversation because I can wax lyrical for hours, but we're really not going to have time for me to get into that.
But just in short, do you think that without Microsoft, we wouldn't have been way further back overall? They didn't
help. 100%. I absolutely do. And I'll tell you why. If you just listen to sort of where I'm taking the conclusion of this current conversation, what's happened in the world, just like I said to you a couple of weeks ago, the drugs won the war on drugs. Open source software won the war on software. today, even Microsoft is an open source house. All software innovation comes out of the open source world, and every single software company goes and hires their people that are the best in open source environment, and they fund open source development, and almost all software development, or a hell of a lot of software development today, is done in the open, in an open source model. And the reason I bring that up in a political conversation is because it gives some very good insights into how you could run the world in a true meritocracy without necessarily even a vote. In a lot of the open source, big open source projects, there's no voting at all. There's what they call a big benevolent dictator, which is a dangerous concept. We can talk about it in depth. But effectively, if you can find one person who really is passionate about what they do and really has the right values to drive your project forward in this point in time, because you know time is an important input into this whole thing, that person can make decisions in an autocracy that are better than a democracy where the thing gets very thin very quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, already the alarm bells are going off.
Yeah, sure.
You know, benevolent dictators are the rarest creatures in 100%. All of this. And when they do, it makes it come along
benevolently to dictate.
Well, I think we've just bastardized the word dictate, but I'll tell you what the...
In terms of the colloquial term, I fully understand that. Benevolent dictate. And Oku's totally in charge and wants the best for everyone and does his best. Right. But I mean, it is kind of an oxymoron in the sense of someone having all the power for the benefit of everybody.
But I think you do get it. I think the real risk, and I think Gareth was about to go there, the real risk here is that Oak's going to die, move on, get old, get bored, whatever the case is. And the next Oak who comes in isn't him or her or whoever. Yeah. And then you've given this power structure to someone that can really, really take advantage of it. So that's a real, real, real risk, and you've got to work out solutions. I'm not suggesting for a moment that we run the world by benevolent dictators. What I'm trying to say is, if we shrink down the power structures to very, very small little units, each unit can decide how it wants to run its thing. And in some cases, a benevolent dictator might be the best way to run that unit, just like you have in the open source world and in churches and in beer halls and in craft markets and in all sorts of other places. There are many, many, many human structures that we depend on a daily basis that are controlled by one person, millions of them. In fact, until just 20 years ago, the Federal Reserve in the US, which arguably is the most influential financial institution in the world, was effectively a dictatorship. It's only in recent times where we've started looking at this thing going, wait a second, that things have had to change.
I think you'll struggle to find anyone who's going to criticize the idea that smaller, more localized controls aren't better than big ones. Because obviously the bigger they are, the more unwieldy they become, the more interests they have to consider under their own umbrella, the more competing interests they have, the more money there is to be stolen. If you have small, I mean, like, you know, if your business is only 10 people big, it's easier to run than a business that's 1,000 people big. You might not be as successful, but you can run it better. You can cut costs. You can look after your employees. Local municipalities. I mean, there have been city states in history that have been run very well. The first democracy ever was a city state in Athens.
Sure.
They would actually, everybody who lived in Athens would meet, I think it was once a week, and they'd vote about whatever was going on. And it was it was only the men at that stage, but every man in the city had to get there. They all had a vote. They all had a say. They're all equal. And they got to decide what would happen with the city. And it made Greece a world superpower eventually, because the same model was copied by other Greek city states. And there's no doubt that the smaller and more localized the government is, the better it is. And the more it delivers, like, you know, if you have a good local government, you don't have potholes, trains run on time. People, there are less unemployed and homeless people. All of the stuff that the little things that actually make a society better get run better. But if you have a terrible local municipality or a terrible local authority, it's a disaster.
Agreed. But so there's a lot to think about here and a hell of a lot to unpack. Like I said, I think that to change the world, we've got to change. We can't change the political structure without changing our thinking, without changing our culture, if you like, our outlook on life. We need to probably go back to core values and start assessing what's actually important. What do we value? Because we're living in a world at the moment where we value consumerism and where we value lots of money, where we're calling success power or money. You know, you actually used the word just now as a good example. For a company to be successful, it has to have scale and it has to have size. And that's probably the wrong way to be looking at this. I think that geography should probably be tying us down a lot more than it does. And I can think of no good reason why I should be able to live in Cape Town and see a Starbucks and a McDonald's and a Wendy's just the same as if I was living in New York. I mean, surely Cape Town can make hamburgers and coffee. Why do we need to import American product or any other country? It's not a, this is not an attack on America. The point is that geography could probably tie it to a very large extent. I think that if we look at capitalism, which is without a doubt a very good model, the enemy of capitalism is monopoly, just like the enemy of communism is bureaucracy. Yeah, in South Africa, we seem to be celebrating both. But be that as it may, we need to have structures in place. If we're going to keep a capitalist system, we need to stop thinking that capitalism, the pinnacle of capitalism, is monopoly. Because when we start talking about large organizations or really, really powerful organizations, we're talking about monopoly at face value. There's just no two ways about it. And that's a terrible thing that destroys. Right.
I want to cut to the chase, though, because as much as I like these alternatives that you're suggesting, I've got to find out right at the beginning of this discussion, because I think this informs everything about the way people feel politically. Are you one of those people, Brett and Gord, and I want to know from you too, if you're listening, you can email us, you can message us on the board right now, or you can send us a WhatsApp on 0797482090. Here's the question. Do you think, A, that it is possible for humans to form a perfect society? Because there are people who think that, and I think they're wrong, but maybe you think that it's possible for us to perfect society. Number two, do you believe humans are inherently good or evil? Because the answer to that will also determine whether or not you ever believe that a government will be able to deliver things. I mean, you talk about the benevolent dictators. You're assuming then that there is some human being who has more good in them than bad. And maybe people are born that way. Maybe they're raised that way. Maybe it's nature versus nurture. But if you do believe, as many people do, that human nature is inherently a bad thing, then really humans should just look after themselves individually in small family groups, and we should never put another human being in charge of us.
Look, I think that those are complicated questions. I think to start off with point one, can we have a perfect society? No, but we can have a perfect society now. So it will always, time decays everything, but we can have a society that's not perfect for everybody, but perfect for a hell of a lot of the people right now. And okay, that can change over time, and who that society is will change. Just like at one point, Athens was a great place to be. Today, yeah, Athens not such a great place to be, depending on where you are in Athens, I suppose. You know, it's an interesting thing. If we have a look at bee colonies all over the world, I don't know enough about bees, but I'm imagining that all bee colonies work in pretty much the same system. Maybe they have like a queen bee and a couple of worker bees and maybe one or two bees that have got machine guns that look after the queen bee. And there's a structured society, and then it works. It's built into their DNA, and there's no squabbling about it. If you wake up and you're that odd fucking unlucky bee that wakes up and decides, right, I want change, well, you're not going to drive much change in a bee society because they've got structure about how it needs to work. Humans, yeah, we blessed or cursed with the ability to decide how we want to build our structures. So that makes things complicated, very complicated. And so there'll never be a perfect society because there'll always be people that believe that it should be different. Yeah. So, but you can, for a brief moment in time, have a really, really great society. And there have been many examples of them over the years. Even America, which today is not so great, perhaps straight after the war, or maybe even a little bit before the war, had some good times, had some good values. If we look at what the founding fathers wrote down and their original constitution, there's some outstanding values in there. Mm-hmm. And I think there were some people that a lot of population. Yeah, go ahead.
There's some great ideas there that actually survived the test of time and that are still as relevant now as they were then. And that's what I'm asking about. Gord, do you think you can perfect society?
Well, no, I think it's something that you look at on a larger time scale. I think if you look at, I've mentioned Hans Rosling's book, Factfulness, before, about how people see the day-to-day bad news, but not the long-term growth and improvement in pretty much all metrics, barring health of the planet. And also, right, if you look at if you look at the evolution of mankind in terms of like not only our technology and our knowledge and all of that, but just in terms of the brutality that's acceptable. I think if humankind gets through a phase now where we sort of at like max Q in a rocket launch, the period of maximum pressure where thrust and air pressure meet, if we can get past that and survive as a species for a few more hundred years and not like devastate ourselves and continue on a positive trajectory, I think a perfect society, as in one where everybody's accepting and tolerant and these norms, like to live the way we do now 5,000 years ago with politeness and not carrying a sword and all of that kind of thing is completely incomprehensible back then. So now what we're doing in 5,000 years or even 500 years, I hope, is incomprehensible in that it's barbaric. So I think there's a perfect society. Humankind has the capacity to be a lot better and will if we get that far. And then I think people are inherently good, but I think we're trying to transcend being creatures of will, as you mentioned, and creatures of and bees who want to bite things and shit everywhere. We're in a transition from the one to the other, and we'll always have characteristics of one and the other. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, we're not going to solve all these problems today. No. And that's, I keep saying that whenever we speak to Brett, but you know,
no utopian society this week.
Sorry, not this week, but we can try. And I think that the key lies somewhere in also harnessing the power of technology, because a lot of the stuff that we need government for can probably be done quite well by machines in the future and will limit the size of government. You know, I think it was Ronald Reagan who said the scariest words any citizen can ever hear is, "We're from the government and we're here to help."
So, yeah, that's frightening. Look, I can't think of a lot of things we need government for at all, to be honest with you, in the modern world. We need a judiciary, and how that needs to be run is an interesting question, because it certainly can't be run by government. We've seen what happens when it's run by government. Globally, it probably is, but be that as it may, we need a judiciary that's independent of everything else effectively, so that whatever laws you got in the country or whatever we've agreed the laws need to be, and especially the constitution of your system, needs to be implemented by an independent body. But beyond that, I really can't think of a lot of things that government needs to bring to the party. You need some kind of police force or some kind of army to protect yourself with, because let's face it, as Gord was alluding to, and it's never going to change in my opinion, you do need the threat of violence. You need to know that you will be arrested and beaten in the street and forced into a van if you completely just sort of flagrantly ignore everything about the law, unless, of course, you're a politician. Everybody else needs to know that, and that needs to the threat needs to be there, even if you never have to implement the threat. But exactly how we implement those pieces, well, there's a lot to unpack and discuss over there. But beyond that, big projects like we used to have 50 years ago, you needed a rail line, or you needed network infrastructure, or you needed roads, or you need. Whenever I have this conversation, one of the first questions that comes up is, who will build the roads? The roads are privatized already. The money's just coming from government. But the people who are building the roads is private businesses. We can tell them that there's things we can do to make the whole thing work with much, much smaller structure at the top.
Well, Monwabisi is agreeing with you. He says, let's make governments around the world obsolete, because we don't need them anymore. Nikita has an interesting point of view. She's in Australia. She says, no society is perfect, but I've lived in Australia for almost a year, and I can say that things work here because people in general look out for each other, despite politicians. They adhere to rules because they acknowledge that it's the best for their fellow citizens. And of course, that is the point. Is it, you know, where my rights end, yours begin? And if your bubbles of rights keep on bumping into each other, this is a real political theory, by the way. It's probably a bit boring. I'm not going to go down that road. But yes, Nikita, you make a good point. Tracy says humans are competitive by nature, and that is the biggest hindrance to a perfect society. Entitlement is another one.
Yeah, I think all of those are good points. I think just to get back to Nikita, those are some interesting points she's got there. And it is a mainstay of Australian society, and part of the reason why they've been so successful. However, I mean, there was a big uproar and furor just a week ago when some really nasty information came out about Australians in Iraq, I think it is, or yes, Afghanistan, killing civilians as part of the initiation process. You got to ask some questions, what the hell are they doing there in the first fucking place? And then you can also start to see exactly like, I forget the name of the second person, that your third person you read out over there was saying entitlement, that's effectively comes back to that. What happens is once these societies, Once we start saying it's an Australian society and therefore Australians have a better society, it becomes a nationalist mindset. You start thinking that you're better than anybody else, and you start enforcing your views, laws, attitude onto other people. And so that's definitely not the direction I think we want to take it in. While Australia at this point in time might be a nice place to live, especially if you've taken the energy and the effort to emigrate from where you are now to go and live over there, you're getting reward for what you've been given. But I don't think those are the values that are going to last us another 500 years, as Gord was saying.
No. And some humans do like rules, and other humans prefer to operate in an environment where they're
in. That's very much. We are very, very different as societies, but we do find our people. We do always hang with people that we like and that we can enjoy the company with. And that comes back to very, very small structures that can make decisions on our behalf. And if you don't like the society you're in and it's a small geographical structure, you can move.
But that's true of also all relationships. You were saying you find your people that you get along with in that. You know, it's better to have higher quality. Lockdown has taught me this and leaving Facebook and all the news fast, et cetera, et cetera. But it's better to have fewer higher quality relationships that you put more effort into than kind of vaguely have some bullshit digital social interaction with thousands of people you sometimes have met and sometimes haven't.
Yeah, 100%.
And government would work in a similar way, I think. Have your 100%. Actual best interests at heart.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is on the other side of that argument. I mean, unless they've got no sense of meaning. So we have lots of alternatives. Every single week we explore another one, and this week is no different with Brett Cohen from the gas company. And, of course, the gas company are located in Gauteng, but they really do amazing stuff. It's not just supplying an alternative form of energy. You can find out more by going to our website, cliffcentral.com, and all the links are there for you to check out what they do. That's why we got Brett on. He thinks differently to other people. So thank you, dude.
Thanks, Gareth. Good to see you again. Thanks, Madrid.
Thank you, right. Brett. Good man.
I'll see you next week.
Yeah, we can't wait for the next shirt.
I'll go shopping on the weekend just to live up to expectations.
If the other one was screaming hair metal, this one is one of those power rock battles that ballads that like Whitesnake sing, where you hold up your lighters and then burn them, then you die.
Oh, buddy, you're killing me. It's like music to my ears. Eh? I think, look, I'm going to get all of you to start singing at the end of the show.
Has its thorns. Every day has its dawn.
There we go. More of that. Eh? You actually got quite a nice voice. I think you should start.
No, I really don't. I just can't.
Beautiful. Gareth, you're still not quite fully awake, but I must say you put up some pretty good conversation for someone half asleep.
No, I'm awake. I just woke up. You know how when you wake up, sometimes the adrenaline that, oh God, I've overslept. That sometimes is the best way to wake up. You just power through your whole day.
Yeah.
So you opened your eyes, clipped on your hair, wiped your face, and was straight on air with us. Like you were, when you started talking, you were asleep 45 seconds before that.
good to see you all.
Thanks. Unplayable. Gareth, good to see you. I'll see you next week, mate.
Cool, Brett. Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.
Gordo, you still there?
Yes, I'm with you. Okay. Till the bitter end, Gareth. And from the bitter beginning. Where me and Sia did our best.
No, it seems like you guys managed perfectly, as I expected you to. Very good. Are you going to do anything for the December holidays? I haven't asked you.
Funds, COVID, lack of interest in flying, and not a lot of reason to sort of want to visit anywhere in the country in particular have got me staying home. Also, I want to be available for my haphazard clients when they do come in with some work, which is not all the time these days. But I'm also just, you know, going to take it easy and try to kind of make it a positive. I don't want to, there's two extremes, right? Like do a lot of nothing or go and jawl, either expensively or hard. And I don't really want to do either of those things. So I'm sort of just taking it easy. But I understand we might be doing a Christmas show.
Yes, that's going to be lots of fun. It was actually your idea.
Mm.
And I've been speaking to a few of the cast and crew of this show and people that we all know very well. And we're going to get a nice little show together just before Christmas as well. So stand by for that one. Should be fun.
And in terms of The Mandalorian, I want to get into it in so much detail, but A, it'll bore the shit out of any non-nerds of the show, and B, a lot of spoilers. But Were you satisfied with the reveal of the Baby Yoda's background, and were you excited to see Ahsoka Tano come back?
This, now we've gone super nerd for people who are not Star Wars.
Well, it's the end of the show, so you haven't tuned out yet. You're not going to miss much.
Yeah, I love the Ahsoka Tano character because I watched The Clone Wars,
I watched it as well, and there was so much of it. Then they recently released like 3 more seasons, and I haven't seen those.
Oh, I haven't seen those either. Then I better get on Disney.
It was all on various different Netflix, wherever it was syndicated. Then you got a warning that these seasons were going to disappear. And once it was fully on Disney Plus and not available anywhere else, they released 3 more seasons. And that was the conclusion of it.
Okay, so I've actually now.
Okay, yeah, you'll great. See if you yeah, Wikipedia, the, you'll see holiday. A big gap between like a bunch of seasons, big gap, and the last 3. I find that shit hard to follow, though, because actually, it was so detailed. Like the Clone Wars, even though it's a cartoon, like so much happens in that. It's like Dragon Ball Z. Yeah. You watch it for years.
So it's animated, and see how they brought back as this character.
Yeah, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
you do know who Rosario Dawson is, right?
Uh-huh,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so she plays the role of this character that we're talking about, and I think she did an awesome job because she voiced that character through all the seasons of the animated series. And yeah, the Baby Yoda is such a breakthrough character. Baby Yoda, I'm sure even if you don't watch Star Wars, you've seen the Baby Yoda character. They've made toys of it. It is probably the most...
Adventure Space and the Crew Dragon.
It's the most merchandisable character in the last 10 years. So cute. And everybody's talking about it. My nephews love Baby Yoda. And they've revealed like a little bit about the backstory of Baby Yoda. Not the whole thing, obviously, but it's really cool.
What's also cool is that this peripheral character in the movies, who's quite central in the cartoons, is like Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker's apprentice. And she sort of escaped the massacring of the Jedi's because she was young and wily and she got away. So there's this like Jedi element still that hasn't been butchered in the Star Wars universe. Like the new trilogy's butchered the Skywalker thing. That could go off on its own and become awesome and still very cool.
All right. Sia's about to
pass. Sia's literally nodding off.
Like I did last night and didn't wake up. My God, I slept
well.
There
were so many words there that were, it was words strung together. You said something.
Any sense to you.
Sia's just hurt because earlier in the show, somebody said that he'll never be able to sing in key. And Sia tried
I'm
to
never
bravely,
gonna
like,
sing again.
A little bit hurtful, but okay, well, we'll get on to the next story. No rhythm. We're right. never okay, gonna sing again. Yeah, we'll see you next week at about 7:15-ish.
Cool. I'll wake up properly next week. I'll make sure I'm awake. Okay, cheers, everybody. Have a happy day.
CliffCentral.com.